This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Are we recording? So may I see by a show of hands, how many of you this is the first time here? Welcome. I know that many of you work very long hours and jobs that demand much of your life energy. And I thank you for taking the time to drive up the hill the hard way, I think. Highway 9's closed. And to come here to practice this sitting down time and resting from all those demands. When you take care of yourself, you take care of all of us. For this last week, since last Sunday at Jikoji, we've been sitting in an extended time of meditation in our annual Meihan-e Sesshin. This is Sunday to Sunday meditation from early in the morning until bedtime. Meihan-e commemorates the Buddha's parinirvana. The Buddha's parinirvana is when he actually died. Entered nirvana, his final death, we would say. And so last week we enacted a parinirvana ceremony. Everybody here made an offering to the Buddha. And it's a ritual in which we honor his death, his final passing, his nirvana, his release or extinction from suffering, samsara. Meihan-e is the Japanese word for this term, nirvana. In Pali, nirvana is pronounced nibbana, so you sometimes see it that way. And it's translated sometimes to mean blowing out like we would blow out a candle. Also, like blowing out the way our mind grasps and clings. To wanting things to be different than the way they are. Nirvana is that release. So a small group, actually not that small, a group of Dharma travelers met here this week and sat every day, ate oryoki every day, walked kinhin every day in noble silence, silent. And in the little bit of time when we were talking, we spoke about the Buddha's last instructions to his disciple Ananda, and also to his Sangha, and also to us. Last week, I talked about this entire practice being about caring, because the Buddha's, one of his last teachings, he said, "Now then, community of practitioners, people of the way, I exhort you, all fabrications are subject to decay. Bring about completion by being heedful." And another translation, maybe a little more accessible, is, "Things fall apart. Tread on this path, your life, our continued existence together. Tread on that path with care." Things fall apart, tread the path with care. So our sesshin started with that, these words, care. And last night, almost the end of sesshin, sesshin ended this morning. But last night, we had a full moon ceremony, and Jerome-san, our beloved Jerome-san, made this. I'm going to show the online community. Do you see the full moon? And can you read the word? Anybody who wasn't here this morning, raise their hand or gassho and tell me, what does it say in that full moon? It's like care. A Rorschach test.
Care.
So I think that our whole practice is about caring. Between last Sunday and today, in this week of Sesshin, we also considered another set on the Buddha's last instructions to his student. And he said this, "Therefore, Ananda, this disciple, be islands unto yourself, refuges unto yourself, seeking nothing on the outside, no external refuge, with the Dhamma as your island, the Dhamma as your refuge, seeking no other refuge." And by the way, in Pali, a language kind of close, adjacent, let's say, to the language that the Buddha spoke, the word is Dipa. And Dipa also is translated not just as island, but also as light. So you sometimes hear this very famously. It's probably on a t-shirt and a mug. Be a light unto yourself, right? Be a light unto yourself. I think that's really accessible. So I like the island because I think it's harder for me to deal with. Be an island unto yourself. That does not sound attractive, at least not to me. I think most of us come to practice because the idea of being an island is how we feel, alone in the sea and adrift. So what was the Buddha talking about? Yet another way of talking about this last instruction, Jiro made this scroll. Can everyone see it right there? It says, friends, on the line, friends, yourself, Dharma refuge. Dharma, yourself, island refuge. Dharma, island refuge. No other. Yourself, island refuge. Dharma, island refuge. No other. So I've been in this seat all week, and that's been boring into me all week, and it's meant a lot. What does it mean to be an island refuge? You, yourself. Spiritually speaking, I think that most people come to a place like this because they want to get away from feeling alone, like an island in the middle of the sea, and subject to the weather of their thoughts and feelings and the weather, the real weather, as you are subject to all the time, and the rest of the world blowing too. I feel that this scroll is telling me that the Buddha used that word island on purpose. And I think he said it is because an island is not just a floating little plop in the ocean. An island is simply the top of a landmass that is emerging above sea level. It's sufficiently high enough above sea level that you can see it. The Buddha's teaching to be an island refuge unto yourself allows you to make yourself, you, individually you, your own lived experience, a refuge. Into a place of security. A refuge is a place of security. The point of that would be for you, with your individual life history and all the life histories before you and all the descendants after you, to recognize that you should trust yourself. You should trust your own experience of what it is to be you right here, right now. What would it be like for you if you trusted yourself like that? The Buddha tells Ananda to look inside for all the answers. Here, he says, it's not about me, Ananda. It's not even about us as teacher and student. It's about you. Look inside. Because nothing on the outside is reliable for you to depend upon. Is there anything outside of you that's not going to fail you? Maybe you've noticed this. Your achievements, your phone, your tablet, your car, your status, whatever it is you think you got going on, It's not going to sustain your happiness. This is of what the Buddha was speaking. There is no comfort out there. Nothing we usually take security in is secure. All the things we turn to for safety are like flotsam and jetsam in the ocean. We cling to these little pieces of wood. One of my students said yesterday, "One, it seems like those pieces of wood are pretty pointy, like they're difficult to hold, right? Maybe one side is smooth and one side is not. And it's been smooth because you've been clinging to it for so long. And you think it's you, but it hurts to hold on to that identity that you think is you, whether it's your achievements or your status or whatever it might be. It's painful to cling. This is suffering. So if there's no actual security outside in the world, what do you got going? What do you cling to? What do you hang on to? What do you do when you're at the top of a 1,000-foot pole? Where do you go? The Buddha's advice is this island. Tells us to be yourself, island refuge. You know, an island protrudes out, but deep down, nothing but connection. So during the week, we talked about being in a refuge, and one of the Sesshin participants noted that we're all like little islands right now. Think of you as individual expressions of an island. If you could, as an island, look down in the water, way, way down, 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 deep, you would feel nothing but connection. That's us, still, emerging up here, down under connected. That's not nothing. So the Buddha has been teaching now for a long time by the time of his death, and he taught them how to become an island refuge. He teaches us, how do you become an island refuge? And he does this through a series of contemplations called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And I'm going to give you two different ways of looking at them, and I think you'll like them. The first of the four foundations is to contemplate this body as just a body. Sorry, for someone who hasn't been speaking all week, you'd think I'd have my voice back, but I don't. Maybe I spoke too much in between. So the first foundation is contemplate this body as just a body. It is just a body. You know that, right? It's not staying the same. You are not the person you were when you were born. You are not the person you will be at your death. This body is just a body. It's not a solid thing, but rather a collection of ever-changing parts. Everything we call this body is just an assemblage of parts. Our Tenzo, the cook this week, and our Fukuten, the assistant cook, they could not have made us these beautiful, nutritious, nurturing meals without every other part of their body working, everything working in concert. It wasn't just their hands working on their own. The whole thing had to work together harmoniously. The second foundation of mindfulness, the second contemplation the Buddha gives us, is the same with feelings. When an emotion is arising, we can observe this emotion as just an emotion. It's just something that's arising. We can stop our tendency to say, why am I feeling this? Why should I have to feel this? I don't want to feel this. I shouldn't have to feel this. How do I stop this feeling? We do this all the time. But we can practice just letting these feelings be feelings. Just like this body is just a body. These feelings are impermanent. There's nothing fixed about them. Trust me, if you haven't only experienced this yourself, one day you feel this way about something, but you get more information the next day, you got a different view. Feelings are just feelings. The important feature about feelings for most of us is that we tend to identify with these feelings Like we tend to identify with our thoughts. We think these feelings are me, I. When we do that, we create a separation from this, which is what's happening right now. But if you know that feelings come and go, they come and go, like your body changing all the time, you don't have to get stuck. This idea of a permanence of anything, your thoughts, your feelings, your body, phenomenal reality, this, by the way, is an important point, maybe the most important point the Buddha was trying to get through our skulls, which is that everything is impermanent and nothing is going to stay. It's one of the fundamental delusions the Buddha was trying his whole life to help us understand. Feelings don't last any more than anything else. The third foundation of mindfulness is to contemplate the mind. Of course, the mind is not here, although we are always thinking it's here. Like the Fukuten and Tenzo's hands, this doesn't work without the whole system. It's the system. And this whole system doesn't work without everything, like the island and underneath the island. The mind is not a single object. Even though we go around thinking it's my idea, consciousness itself is a series of awarenesses, moment to moment to moment, each mind arising moment to moment to moment, on the basis of all sorts of information, some of which you could probably point at and say, I know that, I know that, I know that bird song, I know the smell of that incense, I can smell those flowers, and much of which you can never begin to see the beginning of. The mind does not exist alone any more than your body or your feelings. We can watch our thoughts arise as impermanent. Not me, not I. And the fourth foundation of mindfulness are the physical and mental processes. Maybe an easy way for us to talk about this is reality with a big R. Everything that you can experience, even everything you can't experience, that's the fourth foundation of mindfulness. What we think of as our world, like the body, like the feelings, like the mind, everything continually rises and passes away everywhere. Everything you can experience as part of reality is doing this. Dharma is also a reference to this universal law of nature, which reveals impermanence and interconnection. So, for example, this one can be hard for people, but I like to say that the Dharma of that string outside is to be wet. That's the Dharma of our stream. The Dharma of someone who's feeling angry is to be miserable. The Dharma of a cat is to hunt mice. The Dharma of our friend Luke, he's in the kitchen now helping, is to bicycle. The Dharma of the Tenzo and the Fukuten is to chop. The Dharma of our Ino this week, who held our practice together and told us where to be and when to be and how to do it, the Dharma of the Ino is to do just that. Hold the forms for us so that we can face reality. So to be mindful of reality is to be aware that our suffering is ours. The whole fabric of reality is being seen through my eyeballs. And therefore, the solution to the problem that you think is you is here. I'm going to argue, no problem, no solution. So the Buddha is telling us, find a refuge inside, and this develops trust from your practice. So I'm going to say a line, and I want you to just repeat the first line after me, because we're going to try it two ways, okay, for these four foundations. Here we go. I have a body, but I am not my body. I have desires, but I am not my desires. I have emotions, but I am not my emotions. I have thoughts, but I am not my thoughts. I am what remains. Pure center of awareness. An unmoved witness to everything. Including thoughts, emotions, feelings, and desires. That's version one. So there's a New York City psychiatrist who's also a Zen teacher named Barry Magid. And I think he read this same, this is a philosopher, not a Zen person, who wrote it that way. I am not my body, which I think is very consistent with the way the Buddha was expressing it, by the way. So no dissing this. But I think it arises out of a different time and space. And I want you to hold that version. And now we're going to do version two from Barry Magid. You ready? I am my body. I'm going to say a few things here when you don't talk. I am a living, breathing body with all its physical sensations of comfort and discomfort, relaxation and tension, changing each moment with each inhalation and exhalation, dependent each moment on the air I breathe and the environment which sustains my life. I am my desires. My appetites, my needs for love and attachment, my ambition, my ideals. I may experience satisfaction or not, fullness or emptiness, learning gradually to distinguish my needs from my wants, the conditions from my flourishing, from the fleeting effects of gratification. I am my emotions, my love, my anger, my sadness, my joy, my calmness, my anxiety, my neuroses. Moment after moment, reflecting my inescapable dependence on others, my vulnerability to the vicissitudes of their attention. I am my thoughts, which pass through my awareness moment after moment, like clouds through the sky, sometimes peacefully, sometimes not so much. Whatever their content, I recognize them thoughts, part of the ongoing flow of my consciousness, a necessary part of what feels like me, neither to be banished nor suppressed, but acknowledged as passing. I am my intention to practice the values of the Buddha way. Which are not of my creation, but have been passed down to me through generations and generations of students and teachers on whom I depend for the forms and discipline and understanding that make this practice together possible. I am simultaneously the product of that long tradition and a manifestation right here and now, and its shaper for the future. You too. I am a whole person. Whose body, desires, emotions, thoughts, intentions, awareness are inseparable from my Buddha nature and is continually manifesting interdependence, impermanence, and perfection, just as we are right here, right now. So those are the two views. I'm not my body, I'm my body, all the way through those four foundations of mindfulness. And personally, I love the wholeness of the whole thing, both and. Can we allow both views? Can you hold these together? The first version reminds us that our tradition comes from monasticism, a monastic practice where monks left home, cut off their ties to their families, got a new name, a bowl and a robe, And that was that. They were not householders. But here we are centuries later, in this place, in this time, with a mostly lay practice, people who do not put on robes. In fact, in Zen in America, most of the monks are married, and they have all the complications and messes that come from being married in this world. They're just like us. So now I want you to retrieve the message of yourself as an island. You're this little island sticking up out of the ocean. Okay, put that image back here now. And maybe you can see how both of these views work together. I am an island unto myself. And I am not an island alone. I am this body failing. And I am not this body alone failing. I am this island, and I am deeply connected to all of you other islands, all the islands, all the everything of reality. I am this body is just like the island. I am these feelings is just like the island. I am this body of land protruding, and so are you, up above the sea. And I am also this island, deeply connected everywhere, everything throughout space and time, because there's no way for you to be separate from the Tenzo's hands and body in the kitchen. Like our Sesshin Dharma travelers, the Buddha is asking us to take care of yourself by practicing being with this island as a refuge, moment after moment after moment, never alone, always in deep connection. And in doing that, you may find you're enough, just like this sturdy, benevolent little islands that we are. And deep down, connected to everybody. When you practice this way, you cannot help but care for all the other islands. Everything you can rely upon is right here, right now, all the way out. The Buddha wants us to trust that. And it's enough. Before we take questions and comments, criticisms, whatever you have to offer, I'm going to read you a poem. It's called The Buddha's Last Instruction. So, dear friends of Sesshin, this is a poem based on Buddha's last instructions, which we've been studying and sharing all week. It's by Mary Oliver, so you're gonna love it. The Buddha's last instruction. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness, to send up the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two solid trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward, it thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs, disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his very difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly, I'm not needed, yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, Beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. Okay, your turn. Anyone online? Hi, Rand.
There's something on chat.
Oh.
I think they might have to type.
They did.
Oh, good. I'll read it out for you then. Suggesting adjust camera so we can see ocean weather. Nah. We could go and close the curtain behind to stop the glare. That's a nice idea.
Oh.
You're staring into the white highlight.
Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. That's probably better. Awesome.
Better?
And if anybody else online has a question, you can also type it.
I don't really have a question, but when you say I am an island, of course, I instantly think no man is an island entire unto itself.
Yeah.
And but by the end of the talk, you just united both of those concepts so beautifully. We just appreciate that.
Thank you, Jackie-san. Well, when I first saw island, I thought of the Simon and Garfunkel song. I am a rock. I am an island. And a rock feels no pain. And an island never cries. We know better. Well, if you don't ask me questions, I'm going to ask you questions, and that's harder. Please ask me anything about practice, anything you like. Randy, can you unmute and let's see if we can hear you? I don't think it's going to work. And then you're going to have to type, my friend.
There we go. Can you hear me?
No, I can't hear you, oh boy. Can you type?
Let me see.
So sorry.
Unmute.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Type. Unless you're on your phone or something. There you go.
Okay. No.
Okay. We're waiting. No problem. We know how to sit quietly.
Is the... I can't.
Randy,
well, he's typing. Anyone here?
Speak. I can type in the chat for you.
Typing working?
Yeah, if you speak, I can type for you.
I'm saying that it's just a thought that the definition of an island that cannot exist without the sea, you know, around it.
What?
Tell me more about that observation. She said the definition of an island is it cannot exist without the sea. They define each other. Dark and light.
And
past and present.
Then
tell me more. How does that sit with you?
Because the first thing that I thought that you said, you know, that you mentioned the island, it was the loneliness and the and actually it's
not alone.
Surrounded by something.
Surrounded by something.
And all the islands connected by the same seaport. No.
Yeah, all of you right now. I mean, you're here. You're super connected. You're close islands. You're like little, really close islands right now.
Randy, go ahead. I'll type
okay,
now.
Okay, so Randy's going to speak it and then my interpreter is either going to sign it to me and I'll read it or clip it.
Tess can hear him, but we can't.
The online can hear each other. So.
Oh my God, this is so cool.
Oh yeah,
I'm into this. Okay, go for it, Rand.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay.
This is Sam. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. In Zen practice.
Okay. I'm going to do
act. I want to know.
Oh, Randy, are you connection speaking?
Thinking, to me, it really resonates with the process of sitting.
He's frozen.
And zazen.
But maybe only for us.
And seeing who we really are.
So, Akbar, does the idea of no self
was the question
no free will? You know, I talk about no free will a lot. No, no free will. That's my understanding of the whole mess we're in. Now, no free will does not mean you don't have a choice. It's just that you understand that your choice is not like all yours. How could it possibly be? Where did you come from? So I think of no free will here, total responsibility for your choices here. So to say free will would imply that you're separate somehow from all the causes and conditions that are influencing your choice right now. So I cannot fathom free will, but I can fathom full responsibility for your choice. So given your causes and conditions, all the influences of your personal idiosyncratic existence, meaning all that baggage that you're carrying, you know that all that's there and it's influencing this moment when you're about to make a decision. And from the moment you make a decision with your body, speech, or mind, you're responsible. So both and, no free will, total responsibility. Sorry, the worst of both worlds. But that's, I think, the best of both worlds, because now you know you're responsible for what you do. And it's up to you, right, Akbar? It's up to you. Yes. Yes. So it's not even an implication. Way beyond. Okay. And the thing for me is the process of sitting in Zazen and seeing who we really are. So is that, does that make sense? The thing for me is the process of sitting in Zazen and seeing. So is that, I don't know, is that, who asked us?
Is that it?
Oh, is that it? Is that it? Tess, who actually asked that?
That was Randy's question.
Randy, is that it? Well, this is it, Rand. This is it. It doesn't matter if you're sitting Zazen. This is it. And every this is it. It's over. It's over. It's over. It's over. It's over. This is it. So this idea about who we really are is the island and what's underneath this protrusion out of the water. That's who we really are. So where does the island separate from the entirety of reality? The Buddha would say nowhere. There is no place you can go where you or I or any of these other little cute islands are separate. How could you separate it? Even the water is connected. Where can you say that something exists independently of anything else? That's you. So whatever you see through your eyeballs is you. It's a really hard thing for people to accept because it's so much easier to point and blame and shame and praise. So yeah, this is it. That's you and me and all of us all the time. Yes? Can you live with that? Can you die with that?
He's saying, okay, I can die with that. And he's laughing.
Well, that's what we're doing anyway, whether or not we think we are. We're dying with that. And we're living with that. There's a very famous fellow teacher, Chiazan, who's coming in a few months to teach here, asked for a book about death, a kind of a Zen book about death. And I told him about Frank Ostrzeski's book, The Five Invitations. I'm lucky enough to have met Mr. Ostrzeski a few times. Not like I've got a relationship with him, but I've met him a few times on book tours, and I'm like wowed by him. And by the way, he is a Zen teacher. And the last time I actually got to have a little bit of a conversation with him, more than just, hi, I'm a fan. I actually had a conversation, and he had had a kind of a close to death experience, and he couldn't find his breath. And because I'm a Zenny, we're kind of breathologists. So we talked a little bit about breath. And I told him that my whole life, I've had an awareness of death, my entire since I was very, very small, because I had an illness when I was a little girl that I died. Didn't quite, obviously. But I said, I've always been aware of it. And he looked me in the eye and he opened up the book and he wrote, Nenzen, live. Pretty good, right? Randy, live. While we're dying, live. Okay. Can you read them? They're so small.
Yeah. This is from Emmy, from Yujo-san.
Yujo?
She says, thank you for the Dharma talk, all of it. All of this, Gassho.
Gassho.
To keep this topic, is Nenzenning free will?
There's no free will. There's Nenzenning, there's Antoning, there's Ocean Sanning. I would not ever think, it's not been my experience. You find out for yourself, okay? It's not been my experience that anything I do is not influenced by everything that came before me, including my teachers, including this one, including you. There's just no way that I can find a way to separate Nenzen from the whole beautiful catastrophe of this experience. The people who have died, they're still with me. I see the world when they come to mine. I'm seeing it through their eyes. Something about them is here. Is that just Nenzen? How could it be? That person has somehow entered my cells and I am seeing the world their way for a minute and your way and your way. And it's joyous. And the really interesting thing is when you find it not joyous and irritating and annoying, that's your chance to find out who that is. Who's that Nenzen? Who's that one? And why does she find this unacceptable?
Koyo in Greece.
Hi, Koyo.
Has a question. She said, or there is free will. Can we live with both views? Maybe dependent origination is like free will, but not like it.
Well, dependent origination means, I think, that nothing's independent. So there goes free will, Koyo. How can we be completely interpenetrated and think that we're making choices based only upon our own stuff? One of my teachers, when I was suffering quite a bit, said, well, it's not just your suffering. You know, when you're suffering, there's this kind of like, it's all me and I'm suffering. And I was really suffering, but it's not just mine. And there's no piece of my suffering that's independent of Koyo's suffering. We're just human beings in these bodies with these thoughts and feelings and life as it is, reality. How could it be different? So how do we get an independent force out of dependent origination? I'm listening. If you've got a teaching here, I'm listening. I don't know. I have not found it. I cannot separate anything from anything else. I am ruined in this way, in a way, because I can't see people who are treating me badly as different than me. I've learned a few steps to protect, you know, them from hurting themselves, which would be hurting me and the whole world. But I'm not them. This is a big lesson. For me, anyway, maybe you guys have it down. For me, it's been a big lesson. Nothing anybody is doing is about me. And yet, we're connected endlessly. Can you live with that? Can you die with that? And the reason this is really important for us, not just philosophically and intellectually or spiritually even, the reason the whole practice is important is because you're going to go back out into this marketplace, the big world. You're going to go to your jobs. You're going to go to your families. And you're going to have some things that arise that aren't necessarily a walk in the park. Of course, it always depends on which park you're walking in. But some things are going to be hard for you to deal with. And you're going to say, who is it that thinks this is a problem? How can I meet this without making it a problem? How can I meet this? Whatever this is right now, whoever I am, whoever this one is, whatever's happening here, how can I meet this without thinking in terms of samsara and just repeating my old knee-jerk reactions? That's an endless cycle. Not that much fun. How can you make a choice for nirvana? To release the identity of the one that you think shouldn't be feeling this way, shouldn't be thinking this way, shouldn't have to deal with this stuff. Well, this stuff is still going to be here, even if you're resisting and saying, I shouldn't have to feel it. It's still here. No matter what you do, it's still here. And nothing you can do out there is going to make it go away. There's no island far enough to be disconnected. Nowhere. So go here, the Buddha says. Rain song.
So I was thinking a couple weeks ago when we were up here and we had the storm and that the firewood was getting really low. And then a tree fell and locked all you guys in, like you were in your own little world and island. And then I thought, well, now they got their firewood. And it was just like so perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And thank you for reminding us that it all kind of works together. You know, somehow we're all okay. Even when we're locked, we think we're locked in, something arrives, something falls on the road, and oh, you got firewood. And it just keeps going on this way, right? There's another Jane Hirschfeld poem. I think I've mentioned it this week. So sorry, Sasheen pals, that says that the last, I'm bastardizing it, forgive me, Jane, but the last line of it is that maybe you know this one, and you can do it from memory, but the last bit of it is life gives you more than you can handle. Mm-hmm. You know this. Keeps giving it to you. Keeps giving it to you. You cannot handle it. And trust me, I've been there. You've been there. I cannot take it anymore. And then life gives you more. And you take it. That's what happens. You just keep taking the weather. Being locked in, thinking you're alone. And then the tree falls. You're free. You got firewood. And then someone comes and cuts the tree up and you can get out. There's just no way to be alone. Everything works together. It doesn't mean it's the way we want it to be or fair. My whole life, I've been blowing the candles out on my birthday cake, asking for world peace. I just don't understand war. And it's been around forever. The world is always on fire. So it's not the way I want it to be. It is the way it is. And if I can stop making war here by thinking it should be different and just meet it the way it is, I can stop whatever war I might be making going out in the world with my resistance to how reality is. So our practice is about allowing everything that you are, your thoughts, your feelings, your body, to be who you are, and also to be connected to everything and not you, not all about you, both and. In Zen, we often talk about this in terms of paradox. I don't even think of it as paradox. The sutra is, don't think of it as light and dark. Together. It's all together, all the time. Okay, I don't know what time it is. Let's see. It might be time. I think it is, right? Mm-hmm. If you have any more questions, you're going to have to hold them for yourself and let them be a koan. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.